are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
And views expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, folks, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And those of you joining us for the very first time, a special welcome. I'm delighted you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a great habit to get into. Let me say, for those of you who are new to the show, there's some stuff over at my website, kevinsmithshow.com, that you really ought to check out. One of those things being our free weekly newsletter, all right? It's called the K-Files e-zine, and you'll see it. And you get over to my site, just scroll down just a little bit, and you will see in red letters the information about K-Files e-zine, all right? Click that. Click those red letters. It'll take you 10 seconds to subscribe. It's truly free, no strings attached, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want. Most people don't. They stay with us forever. But, in fact, you know, our very first subscriber is still with us. Subscribed 7 years ago, still with us. Anyway, I got to tell you that, here we are. It's Monday. We're off to a new week. Great shows lined up. Great guests tonight and great guests throughout the week. However, I've got to tell you, because I've been announcing that Dr. Stephen Greer would be with us this week on the 17th, I received an email today saying that he has been called away urgently and unexpectedly and would have to reschedule. So we're trying for next week sometime, hoping that we can get him on with us. But we will eventually get this all worked out. He'll be with us. We've got great guests this week, and you want to be with us each and every night, because if you miss even a second of this show, you're going to miss a universe of information, and you don't want to do that. Did you see in the news about what the researchers at the University of Minnesota have done? What they have done is they have been able to take some cells from a rat and grow a rat heart in the laboratory and then start it beating. Now, that is phenomenal. And at its best, it only was able to pump about 1/4 of the normal rate of a normal fetal rat's heart. But it's a start. And the goal is to be able, according to the article that I read, the goal is to be able to take some of your own cells, some of your own DNA, grow a heart or a liver or whatever you need in the laboratory, and then use that as a transplant into you if you need it. So right now, about 50,000 people per year die from, they're waiting for a heart transplant and they're waiting for a donor. And even when you get a donor, there's, a big, big problem of rejection and so forth. So this really holds some promise. And, I think these people are really onto something here. I think... I think I should finish this on the other side of the break is what I think. But look, imagine that. You could grow, you need a heart, you could, they grow one for you. And it's yours, it's your DNA. No rejection. Cool stuff, huh? All right, we'll be back. My guest, Luke Fortune, can you build your own UFO? He says, yes, we will return. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel AllStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Well, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments. So click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Luke Fortune. And I have to tell you, he has really caught the attention and imagination of lots of people in our audience because you've been sending me email, folks. All of you scattered all over the world, you've been sending me email about this website. And this website is called UFOHowTo.com, and it's got information about patents and UFO technology that is patented, and you can essentially, I guess, build your own UFO. And you've been sending me email. You've been requesting that I get in touch with this guy. One of our listeners in the UK actually sent an email to him and told him that he ought to get in touch with me. and then also sent me an email saying, hey, I got in touch with this guy and told him to get in touch with you. That's how we got together. Luke Fortune, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hello.
Your story is pretty interesting. I mean, the information you've got is really interesting, but your story is. You're a certified paralegal.
Yes, sir.
And then in 1997, after you had a clear viewing of a plasma propulsion craft, you started researching the archives of the Patent Office, U.S. Patent Office. And we'll get into that, but first, tell us about this thing that you saw. What is it that you saw?
Well, I was on my way to go visit family in the heartland, and as I had passed the Rocky Mountains, I stopped at a point to take a look back and take a breather from the long drive. And as I was looking at the mountains, I saw a glowing red ball of light flying parallel with the mountains beneath their snow line. Now, this craft was only in my sight for about 3 seconds, but I had it directly in my sight. I mean, I could count. And in that 3 seconds' time, I had to turn 90 degrees to follow it the length of the mountain range. At the third second, it suddenly blasted with a bright red flash and made about a 150-degree turn, seeming almost to arc back upon itself, disappeared over the mountaintops and into the wild blue yonder in less than half a second.
I guess you were pretty impressed.
It was a surprise. Mm-hmm. The initial thought that came to mind was that I was witnessing some sort of maybe a military craft or some sort of experimentation, but I had no idea, and in poking around after coming back from the family visit, no one could give me any answers. So that began my serious search.
One of the things in our exchange of email that came across is, and I got to tell you, I'm both, now this will be a paradox, but I'll explain it. I am both surprised and not surprised at all that there are people who have started calling you a debunker, and there have been some kind of nasty things, maybe even threats against you. on the one hand, it baffles me how anybody could be that stupid to call you a debunker. And on the other hand, I'm not surprised. Here's why I say that, Luke. Let's say, just for argument's sake, that the crash that took place in Roswell back in 1947, let's just say that it was extraterrestrial, just for the sake of argument.
Okay.
Since that time, we have had nothing but story after story after story after story, and a lot of these seem to be fairly well corroborated, that the United States government has been trying to back engineer. Now, I don't know for a fact that that's true, because I have not personally been involved in any of that and have not personally seen it. But for the sake of argument, I'll say, okay, that's true. Well, you know, from 1947 till now, do people think that we would not have developed technology from that? We certainly would. On the other hand, we have stories coming out of World War II telling us that the Nazi government, the military, and scientists that they all hired worked on what we would call UFO technology, or flying saucer technology, if you will, and exotic propulsion systems. We have these stories that they actually flew these saucer-shaped craft, and whether those are true or not, let's just say for the sake of argument it's true. That predates 1947.
Correct.
So there you have technology on display, if you will. It's being tested. Do we not think that it would have progressed from then until now? It seems to me to be a natural progression that we would have arrived at a point where there are a lot of patents out there that display for us what we would call, perhaps, UFO technology. Am I off base with this?
No, you're very much on base. In fact, in the second book of the UFO how-to series, Electrogravitics, there are at least three patents that come from the early 1930s that have to do with electromagnetic propulsion systems for flying craft.
But would some of that be Townsend Brown stuff?
I was specifically speaking not of Townsend Brown, speaking of other people like Jose, what's his name, Navasquez, and the like, but T. Townsend Brown does take a very prominent place in that book, and it's good that you should bring him up, because at 1947 in particular, both he and John Searle were doing a lot of experimental work with the flying discs, and John Searle had actually lost a couple of discs into orbit, unable to control the propulsion system initially. So it's entirely possible that the 47 crash could have been a recovery of Townsend Brown's work, could have been a recovery of John Searle's work. Now, for the record, like we said, I'm not a debunker. I'm not taking an anti-alien stance, so don't let the viewers, you know, in any way think that I'm, you know, advocating that. I'm just saying it is a possibility.
Yeah, well, now, just to put your mind at ease, I have said on this show many times that I think the vast majority of what people see, at least in the United States, this is just my opinion, I think the vast majority of it is our stuff that's just being tested and is really futuristic. I cannot prove that, but I think that's probably the case.
I am inclined to agree with you.
I don't rule out by any stretch of the imagination, I don't rule out that some of what we see may be extraterrestrial. Now, when I say that, I always get email, Luke, where people are criticizing me for saying, for wording it like that. But the fact is, do I think that there are extraterrestrials? I don't think there's any mathematical possibility or probability that we are alone in the universe. I think the probability is zero. I think there's probably extraterrestrial intelligent beings out there.
It would be very arrogant for anyone to take the stance that we are the only planet in the cosmos with life.
Yeah. But I give us credit for being smart enough to create some of this stuff ourselves, too. And, you know, who would have thought? Look, do you remember Gulf War One? And remember how the whole world was just in awe of the super high technology weapons that we were using. And then General Schwarzkopf came on the television and then a press conference and said, that's all obsolete. He said, we've got things to throw at him that he cannot even begin to imagine. And, you know, since that time, and he said, look, when something gets deployed, the actual level of our technology is between 40 to 50 years ahead of that. Now, when you just let your mind run with that, and, you know, I give us credit for, and I give our scientists and our military credit for being able to be way ahead of the curve of what we imagine. And so let me ask you, have you received some threats because people think you're a debunker?
I have received a couple of veiled threats from people who seem to be very threatened by the idea that the technology could be anything other than from another world. And that was kind of the reason for the, you know, concerns voiced in the emails we exchanged.
Well, let me do this. First of all, I get threats too, and there's no secret about where I am, you know. So, but look, here's the deal. Airbus came out with a new plane, a big monster of a plane called a 380, Airbus 380. Now Boeing has said that they are coming out with their plane, which will be in competition with the 380. The difference is the 380 just looks like an Airbus. It's just gigantic.
Okay.
The Boeing project, I've seen pictures of it. It's on the internet. It's a delta wing. Basically, it's a flying triangle.
Right.
And it seats 1,000 people. And it really looks like something space age. It's way ahead of the Airbus 380 in its look. And I would just say there's some proof right there. It's beginning to get into commercial aviation, this really spacey-looking stuff. It's coming out. It's coming out, and this is not just a concept. They're building the plane. And, you know, that's commercial aviation. You consider what military aviation must have.
Yeah.
You know, when they retired the Blackbird, they said it's, you know, it's obsolete. Well, a thing can only be obsolete if there's something that is better, faster, more exotic that has replaced it.
Correct.
We don't know what that is. All right, let's talk about some of this stuff now. You, being a paralegal, you knew how to go research this stuff. And in 1997, you began to research the patent office. What made you decide that was the place to start?
Well, in 1997, that was when we had the viewing of the craft. The actual patent office search would start a few months after, but wouldn't really get serious until a couple of years later, maybe closer to about 2002 or 2003. It was actually because of a client that was requesting some work. I should say a friend who was requesting some work to help him procure his own patent. And that was when I stumbled across the first of the older UFO patents came out of 1907.
What?
1907. Now, this isn't for an electrogravitic or a plasma-based craft. This is an airfoil-type craft. But you're looking at an application from 1907 that was granted about 2 years later for a flying craft that moved like a hummingbird, able to hover or dart about in any direction in the sky at will. And you see the drawings of the craft, it is not airplane-shaped, it is not helicopter-shaped, it is the saucer shape.
1907
was the application, and the grant was, I believe, late 1909 or early 1910. But it is actually one of the first patents referenced in the first volume of the UFO How-To series, 100 Years of UFO Patents.
All right, now, what sort of propulsion system did it envision?
The idea would be based on a gas-based engine, basically working as a giant airfoil, blowing down a bell-shaped duct.
Okay. All right, so it's blowing compressed gas, I guess.
Yeah, compressed air.
Yeah. All right. Was it ever built?
It was my understanding that throughout the 20th century, patents would not be granted unless the patent applicant had a working model to show to the patent examiner. I know that at least as of 2005, that has changed, and you can submit just drawings and not a working model. But since almost all the patents that I reference in the series come from the 20th century, it is presumed that, yes, there were working models.
Doesn't it seem a little odd to talk about the 20th century in the past tense? You know, it seems almost Star Trek-ish.
For real.
I'm sorry?
I said for real.
Yeah. All right, now, that was 1907. When did we get into patents that really seemed to be more UFO-ish?
Well, these would be UFO-ish in the regards of taking a look at the older pictures that show the gray disc-shaped craft. A lot of times, like the black and white photos that show the craft just as a metal object in the sky.
Okay.
When you start to get into the electromagnetic and electrogravitic craft, or as Townsend Brown called them while he was working on them, electrokinetic. I use the word electrogravitic as sort of a blanket term for all the electromagnetically based propulsion that's not, you know, fixed wing or airfoil or et cetera. That coming out in the 30s and 40s, you started to see the emergence of the magnetohydrodynamic craft in the 60s and the plasma propulsion in the 50s. It's kind of ironic that a late 1950s patent was for a plasma propulsion system that was 60 times more powerful than chemical rockets.
And they had to have, at that time, they had to have a working model.
To my understanding, yes, correct.
Do you recall who it was that got that patent?
That patent is actually the very first one listed in Volume 3, the Plasma Propulsion Series. I've also just recently created kind of a sampler book. It has one electrogravitic, one magnetohydrodynamic, one plasma propulsion patent, and it's a $10. It's just called UFO How-To, The Basics, and it's a good primer to get people started in understanding, you know, how these technologies come together to make the UFO craft, or the different kinds of UFO craft.
All right. Now, let's assume that the plasma craft was built, the plasma propulsion system, that it was built and successfully tested. That brings up a question, a lot of questions, but it brings up this question immediately to my mind. We just completed that XPRIZE. Whoever in private industry could build a rocket ship or build a ship to get into space, and I think within 2 days they had to do it again. Anyway, you know the deal, the XPRIZE.
Yes, sir.
Why did they use rockets? Why didn't they use this plasma propulsion system?
Well, there are two main reasons that I can think of. And one is that in the U.S., not looking at any of the other patent offices, but just in the United States, there are over 7 million issued patents. That's a lot of sorting. And I think just the sheer volume would probably intimidate a lot of people. Secondarily, our society is a pay-per-use society. You look at the power system that we use with electricity. You look at the gasolines that we put in our cars. You look at the cellular technology, cell phones. It's a pay-per-use, and the industry wants to maintain that type of paradigm. If technology is released that causes people to not have to pay every time they want to use a device, that's viewed as lost profits, and so the encouragement is not going to be towards that kind of technology. They're going to use whatever influence necessary to try to keep people on a pay-per-use.
Yeah. Now we're headed into a break. Let me just make this comment. The recording industry has beat people over the head, tried to force people to stop using the internet to get their music. They want you to buy CDs. CD sales plummeted this year. As their lawsuits increased, their sales plummeted.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're trying to figure out, okay, people are going to do the internet thing, so how can we figure out a way to make it profitable? The same type of mass movement could simply force utilities and the paradigm that exists, a mass movement of people away from the status quo structures, could simply force them to play
right.
catch up. And I got to ask you, think about this because we're headed into a break. Think about this, and when we come back from the break, I want you to talk about that just a little bit. Do you think it is possible that we could see a mass movement to new technologies that would force the powers that be, if you will, to play catch up? It's already happened with the internet and the music industry. All right, we'll be back on the other side of this with Luke Fortune.
And we are back. Now, my guest this evening is Luke Fortune. He is the author of the information over at UFOHowTo.com. Now, here's the deal, folks. Right beside where the photograph would be, and he asked that we not use a photograph of him for personal security reasons, but right beside that, you'll see it says website. That's on my website, kevinsmithshow.com. If you click that link, it'll take you to his website. Underneath that is another link that'll take you to a video that he has prepared, all right? Luke,
what about the question I ask? Do you think that a mass movement of people away from the old technologies and just, you know, plugging into their own technologies, do you think that would force the status quo to play catch up as it has tried to, as it's trying to do now in the recording industry?
I would say absolutely. The challenge that we're facing is getting the information out to people that they have other options.
And that's what your site is all about and what your books are about.
Yes, sir. A lot of people aren't aware of the fact that a craft that glows like a fireball in the night sky, that can dart around at high speeds, that's invisible to radar, was designed, built, and patented in the late 60s, and is now public domain information. It's presumed that everyone knows about the technology, but no one is pushing it. No one is enforcing it. The industry tries to say, well, things are being built based on what the market will bear. People show an interest in the following. Well, they only show an interest in the following because they're not being made aware of the fact that these other options exist.
Yeah, you cannot be interested in something that you don't know about.
Correct.
All right, now, in a practical manner, I mean, is it practical that someone with a little bit of engineering skill could take these patents and build his own UFO?
Well, a person would have to probably have some experience in working with ceramics, some experience in machining and metalworking, and in being able to draft blueprints. Based on having those skills, I would say yes. Very much so.
Would it be prohibitive in terms of the expense?
Well, a lot of the expense is based on what type of propulsion systems are wanting to be used. If you're using very exotic materials, like I seem to recall barium titanate running approximately 500 an ounce, someone may need to correct me on that, on what the current sales are. But if you're planning on building a very, very large craft, hey, you could look at things getting a little costly, maybe along the lines of, say, if you were trying to build your own sailboat out of concrete.
All right. But what about, I mean, are these things like really, really high technology to the point that look, I know that I could not fly one, or I think I could not fly one. But someone who has the skill sets, say, to build a jet aircraft, if they're, and I mean, there are a lot of people that listen to this show that's what they do. They build jet aircrafts.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if they've got that skill set, could they possibly build their own? I mean, or is this like really advanced technology that's beyond that skill set?
I don't believe that it's technology that's too far advanced. In my own personal opinion, based on the hundreds upon hundreds of patents that I have read, the research that I have done, I think it would be entirely possible to, say, take a plant like the Boeing plant, or to take a plant like General Motors and convert it so that they're not building what they're currently building, but instead building the, quote, UFO, unquote, craft.
All right. Because of the fact that these were patents from way back in the 20th century, because of that fact and the fact that they, it's your understanding, they had to have a working model of it, that would then tell us that there were humans that knew how to fly these things.
Correct. Absolutely.
What did you discover, if anything, about people have seen unidentified objects in the sky traveling at very high rates of speed and then suddenly make a 90-degree turn. The speed at conventional aircraft simply can't do that. It's just not possible for conventional aircraft to do it. But if they could, it would kill everybody inside. Did you find out anything about how they mitigate the forces of inertia?
In the primer book, The Basics of the UFO How-To Series, and in Electrogravitics, those issues, second volume, are addressed. With the electrogravitic propulsion, it's not like anything that most people think of. To backtrack just a little bit, long story short, you're taking a very large capacitor, charging it to a very, very high level, and feeding pulses into it at a rapid rate. Now, the proper materials will increase what's called the electrogravitic effect. What ends up happening is the material responds almost like it were being drawn by a magnet, but at the higher the voltage, the higher the power level of movement. Now, part of the reason why so many of these electrogravitic craft are saucer-shaped, and some of the pictures that you see show the craft, you would expect it to appear to be horizontal, but instead it looks like it's vertical flying through the air, is that electrogravitic effect is being created on the large surface area, and then the forward propulsion is mitigated. The inertia is mitigated. The inertia isn't quite canceled out, but the inertial effects are removed within the space of the covering of the propulsive element of the UFO craft. Does that make any sense?
I think so. Let me say it as I understand what you said. The skin of the craft itself is part of the propulsion.
Correct.
And because of that, the electromagnetic forces or the electro forces that are flowing through the skin of that craft are mitigating the force of inertia inside the craft.
Yeah, they're creating a neutral center where it's safe for people and equipment to exist.
And so it could make a 90-degree turn at 10,000 miles an hour, and people inside would feel nothing.
So to speak, correct.
What would keep the craft from breaking apart structurally?
Again, that would be because of the inertial dampening done by the electrogravitic effect. To understand the electrogravitic effect, it's best explained by the work of Henry Wallace and his discovery of elements with odd nuclear spin values. Oh, I'm breaking up on you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Elements with odd nuclear spin values. Now, most everyone knows from thinking back to junior high school science class that there is momentum of the electron. There's a movement of the electron that is both the rotational as it spins around and the orbit as it circles around the nucleus.
Mm-hmm.
The nucleus itself also rotates. And these materials that have the odd nuclear spin value, they're elements that have a higher degree of neutrons or a higher number of neutrons within them. They respond to the electrical pulsing in the direction of their collective north poles and then launch and move in that direction. Can you hang for just a moment?
Sure.
Okay, sorry, back with you.
Mm-hmm.
Break up. Let's see, we were talking about odd nuclear spin values.
Okay, so but the main thing is that the same mitigation of inertia for people inside also protects the structure of the craft itself.
Correct.
Okay.
The only danger that would come is for elements that have really, really high spin values, oftentimes they tend to be radioactive.
Yeah.
Things that have the high spin values that aren't radioactive could be made radioactive. They have what's called induced radioactivity by prolonged exposure to electromagnetic fields or to high-power electrical pulses. There's really good work by a gentleman named Gustave Le Bon in a book called The Evolution of Matter, where he talks about induced radioactivity. You could also just Google it to learn more about it. So,
all right, so let me ask you this now. You saw in 1997 a craft using plasma propulsion.
My analysis that it was definitely plasma propulsion.
All right. Now, what was the shape of this craft?
Well, what I saw was basically a glowing red ball of light. There appeared to be a dark tip. My presumption was that I was looking at the exhaust of the plasma thrusters. And all the subsequent patent knowledge, or I should say all the subsequent patents that I would examine substantiate that analysis.
Okay. So you couldn't see much of the craft itself, but the glowing plasma around it.
Right, or emanating from behind it.
Okay. Now, this plasma craft, have you seen anything like that since, or have you seen exotic things in the air since that fall into your into this category of your research?
I've spent most of my time in major metropolitan areas.
I should have watched. We are into a break. We will answer that question or get you to answer that question when we come back. Folks, on the other side of this break, more with Luke Fortune.
This foolish fight.
Did you know the Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcast right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. Back, and my guest is Luke Fortune. He is the author of the information about UFO technology that has been patented in the U.S. Patent Office, or by it's the patents are there. UFO technology that's available, it's there. He searched it out and he's written it up in some books and a lot of information on his website and some videos. Now, Luke, before we went to break, I asked if you had seen anything else in the skies that would fall into your category, or the category of your research, and you were just about to tell us.
Well, as I said, I live in a major metropolitan area, so for the most part, the lighting I don't think is good enough to be able to do so. I did see a little bit of the video of the glowing craft that was spotted over San Diego just a little while ago, just a couple weeks, I think. And those craft could easily be magnetohydrodynamic craft or even electrogravitic craft charged to a high enough potential.
What is the magnetohydrodynamic? What is that?
Magnetohydrodynamic is basically a 50-cent word for fluids that are, what would be the way to describe it, affected by electric and magnetic fields. In the case of a magnetohydrodynamic craft, what you have is a flying craft that gets charged to a very high level electrically, and it ionizes the air around it and turns it into a plasma. As I was saying earlier, one of these craft patented in the 60s, now public domain, could easily describe or easily make replicable the lights in the craft that were seen over San Diego.
All right. Now, earlier, you told us about some early experiments where, back around 1947, in that time period, where somebody lost a couple of these because they flew off into orbit or into space at tremendous speeds. Who was that?
That would be the English inventor who did not patent by name of Searle, John Searle. In reading some of his work, some of the kind of autobiographical, he had indicated losing his initial craft because of just developing such thrust and such charge that got out of control and basically shot into the atmosphere.
Did it have a pilot on board?
No.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing.
No loss of life there recorded, but it's entirely possible that could have been the 47 wreck at Roswell.
All right, now these things have to develop a great deal of electrical charge. For that, there has to be some kind of a power plant on board. What do they use?
Well, for the generation, like it is known for the... like you were talking earlier about the German experimental craft prior to World War II, they actually ran on 12 diesel engines. It would be entirely possible that some of these could run on gas engines. There are a number of patents that have been produced that talk about using antimatter propulsion or that use fusion or cold fusion drives. I think that may not be necessary to go to those levels. In fact, it may only require the ability to build that little toy known as a Tesla coil. A lot of people are unaware of the fact that when Nikola Tesla, the inventor who gave us our 60-cycle power system, who gave us radio and television transmission, who gave us X-rays, who gave us rotary distribution in cars, 117 patents here in the United States. When he came to this country back in the 1870s, he had in his hands one of the only possessions he brought with him were his papers for a flying machine that he had devised, one that he did not patent, but he did spend a lot of time talking about. He said that it flew on sound electrical principles, not subject to the chaotic forces of aerial conditions. He said it was a craft that had no wings, had no ailerons or planes, no propellers, no external attachments, but that by flying on these sound electrical principles could fly at great speeds, not be disturbed by turbulence, and if you were to see it on the ground, you wouldn't think it a flying machine at all. It's like, well, this does kind of fall within the description of what most people would call a UFO.
Do you think he ever built it?
I think that he attempted to, and that he attempted some prototyping. The museum officials at the Nikola Tesla Museum in Belgrade have stated on the record that he left sketches of interplanetary ships, but that this information has not been made available to Western scholars.
By the way, I have not been inside of that, but I have seen it in Belgrade. Have you ever been to Belgrade?
Unfortunately, I have not, but I do look forward to someday.
Fabulous city. You'll love it. Yeah, it's a great place. And if you ever get there, you'll want to go over to the Hotel Yugoslavia, go out the back door and down to the river, because right at the river's edge, it's the Danube, we call it, they have all these floating restaurants that are just fabulous. It's a beautiful place. All right, now, do you know the name Dr. Jack Sarfatti?
Can you spell the last name for me?
Yeah, Sarfatti. That's unfair. I'm probably blindsiding you with that. But
rings a bell, but I can't place it.
Yeah, he's been a guest on the show. He's a physicist, been a guest on the show, and one of our guests, he was talking about these exotic propulsion systems, and one of our audience called in to talk with him, and said, they would have to develop a tremendous amount of power to do that. And he said, that's correct. And to the best of my memory, the audience member says, it seems to me it would be, pretty difficult to develop that kind of energy and still be able to fly. And he said, well, it must not be. The UFOs do it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
He said, it must be pretty simple. And so you're saying the use of the Tesla coil could do this?
Potentially, yes. Tesla didn't elucidate exactly the techniques behind it, but William Lyne, Lyne, L-Y-N-E, in his books, he discusses his research regarding the German UFO patents and tracing it back, or the German UFO craft and tracing it back to Tesla. When Tesla tried to initially bring his work to American and British forces, that he was kind of poo-pooed at that point in his life. His reputation had been marred. He was no longer looked upon as the genius that he was at that time, and so a lot of his work went overseas and may have became the foundation for the German craft. It's entirely possible that not large amounts of power are needed, but large amounts of voltage. And the resonance transformer that's known as the Tesla coil would be able to provide just that.
Interesting how far seeing and far reaching and forward thinking some of these leaders can be, isn't it?
Some of these inventors?
Leaders. Like the ones that poo-pooed Tesla. Oh. Very smart of them, wasn't it?
Yeah, not exactly the greatest decision that could have been made.
Yeah. Really, it's so important for people who are in any position, anywhere, very important for them to think in terms of this guy that's under me maybe really shouldn't be. Maybe this guy that's under me is smarter than me. You know, Edison, by comparison to Tesla, was a retard.
True.
Compared to Tesla. And look, okay, folks, I know it's not politically correct. All right, go ahead and send the email. I'll delete it duly. He really was, compared to Tesla, he was nowhere in the same galaxy.
But Edison was willing to play the game. He was willing to support the system of pay-per-use, where Tesla had intended to give the entire world free power, free communication.
Yeah, and that's the problem. And in fact, I think Westinghouse told Tesla that the free energy thing wasn't going to fly because they couldn't figure out how to put a meter on that.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, we're headed into a break, folks. And
when we come back from this break, we are going to continue talking with Luke Fortune. Fascinating information about patents in the U.S. Patent Office. Patents for what we would call UFO technology. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
I might be a loser in this place. call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and let me welcome all of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, and let me tell you that we are talking to Luke Fortune. He is the author of the information that many of you have been emailing me about, information at ufohowto.com. And what he's done is he's gone into the U.S. Patent Office and has researched patents that have to do with UFO-type technology. You have an opportunity to talk with him right here, right now, by calling us on our toll-free number at 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092 if you wish to talk with Luke Fortune. All right? Now, if you live, that number is toll-free throughout all of North America, so that includes Canada, right? If you live outside of North America, you can still participate free of charge by sending me a flash message. That's just an email, but you address it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, all right?
So, Luke, let's just go straight to the phone lines. And, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, yes. So this is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yes, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing good. Did you get my email earlier today?
I have not read all of my email today.
Okay, yes. I'm a long-time listener of Paranormal Radio Show. This is actually my first time listening to it. And
oh, yes, about the guy that calls in?
Yeah, I did.
But did you have a question for the guest or
yes.
a comment?
Yes. Have there ever been any like artificial structures that have ever been found on Mars?
Do I know anything about the artificial structures found on Mars? That's your question.
Yes. If there have ever been any,
I do not know. I have not done any research in that regard.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. Toll free throughout North America. Luke, you know, nobody but you has walked in your shoes, right? You're the only one that's walked in your shoes. But I can imagine. I can imagine doing this research in the patent office and having an oh my god moment. Did you have one as you looked at that information? Was there a moment when you said, oh my god, look at this?
Yes, but it wasn't overwhelming. It instead just built a fire under my seat to want to continue to learn more. I actually learned that there is a physics professor named Fran DiAquino, and he was kind enough to write the first six pages in the second volume, Electrogravitics, attempting to explain mathematically how electrogravitics works and the best way and means for harnessing the same. So that was very, very nice to see that there were similar like-minded people, but someone who is much more talented in his respective science and craft.
So
he's a physics instructor, and I'm, you know, a paralegal. But
so there was not a single "oh my god" moment. It was just an accumulation of moments that became "oh my god."
Yeah, very, very small fires that just continued to turn into the large, raging bonfire of my insatiable curiosity to know as much about the topic as possible. You know, I had purchased from other people books in the past that supposedly discussed UFO technology, and I found that oftentimes they were just full of the author's individual theories and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they did contain a patent, it might contain, you know, the first page of a patent, and that was just so frustrating, because when you want to know, you want to know. You don't want to mess around with what someone thinks might be happening. You don't turn into the news to hear what someone thinks may have happened. You want to know what happened. And so I wrote these books with that mind frame in mind. What would I want to purchase? What do I want to know? What would other people who really want to know have?
Yeah, cool. All right, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Yes, Michelle.
Good evening, Kevin.
Good evening.
And good evening to your guest.
I don't know if he can hear you. Can you hear our caller,
Luke? It's a little bit of a strain, but I'm trying.
Okay.
Okay, my question is, we're hearing about propulsion, but how about metal stress? What do we have for any kind of material we could make something that these motors, that are supposed to be 60 times stronger than rocket motors, hold together? How about the metal stress? And
that's a good question. Luke, what about the material that would be used for the skin of these craft?
Well, the great thing about this is that it's not the material itself. We can use materials that we currently possess, that we currently have, because it is either an electrostatic or a high-powered electromagnetic field which creates the separation between the plasma and the craft, or between the plasma and the thruster. So you're actually using the electrostatic and electromagnetic fields to create sort of the insulation, because there's no way that we could have a material that could resist the burn temperatures. I mean, you're talking of millions of degrees Kelvin.
Hmm. Okay. Michelle, does that answer your question?
Yeah, if I can just make a comment, Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the only thing that, you know, we hear lots about Roswell, but the piece of metal they found that had a memory, a genetic memory, where, you know, they folded it up in their hands and it always came back to the same position.
Right.
See, that's what I always figured, that was the key point of the whole story, is because you'd have to have something like that. And I don't know if we have anything like that yet.
Well, I don't know that we would have to if we're not using the same propulsion system that an extraterrestrial craft would use. Have you ever heard, Michelle, have you ever heard the old saying, there's more than one way to skin a cat?
Yeah, I've heard the saying.
Yeah. And I think that's probably true in all of technology. There's more than one way to get there.
Well, I was just hoping there'd be somebody out there that was working on something and they might give us a hint.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call, man. All right. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. That's the toll-free number. And if you call that number, you can talk with my guest, Luke Fortune. Ask him what questions are on your mind about this UFO-type technology. Let's go to the phone line and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Dick from Lebanon, Indiana.
Yes, Dick.
I have a couple comments for your guest. The first comment that I would have on the 1907 date that he talked about the airfoil, I actually seen in a document that was like 10 years later than that. And the 1947 crash at Roswell, that was actually an alien craft.
Okay.
Do you have the patent number, sir, for your 1917 reference?
I can find it. That's not a problem.
Okay, that'd be great, because there's actually a couple of patents that I cite from that time frame.
Okay.
All right. Anything else, Dick?
I think that'll do it.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092. And if you push those numbers in that order, will be transported magically right into the studio, all right? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's Tony in the Chicago suburbs.
Yes, Tony.
I was curious as to what was the most intriguing thing that was found in the archives other than the propulsion systems, something that was intriguing and not expected to be found.
Well, I think I would have just the thing for you. It would be it's not granted as a patent yet. It is a patent application by a young man by last name of St. Clair. Comes from one of the islands, one of the territories. It's for let's see if I have this in the right order, a magnetic atomic vortex wormhole generator. We'll see if this is a patent that actually gets granted. He's a very unusual inventor who has a lot of very good, very futuristic in the present now ideas. And I wish him success because I think he will make great strides and bounds for our society.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right, Tony, thanks for the call. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. It's toll-free throughout North America. That includes Canada. I would suspect that with reference to the caller, a couple of callers back, talking about he has seen documentation from about 10 years later, I would suspect that there might be a number of patents that
indeed
would be somewhat similar in any time period.
Indeed. There's in the 3,000 pages that take up the UFO How-To series, not including the primer, the 3,000 pages that comprise the six main volumes of the encyclopedia series, there is a lot of information that was weeded out. I did everything in my power to try and weed out any patents that were references just to airplanes with funny shapes. I tried to do everything in my power to keep the focus on UFOs and UFO technology. So, yeah, it's entirely possible. Plus, there's also the question of, I believe he was calling from Canada, right?
No, he was calling from here in the United States.
Ah, okay.
From Lebanon.
Oh, he was from Indiana. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought he might have been the gentleman from Quebec.
Yeah, but it's I was just the thought hit me that, you know, it very well could be that he has seen a patent.
Absolutely.
Well, I know he has. I happen to know who that is, and he says he saw it.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm saying that it very well could be one from that period of time, or, you know, from 10 years later, and one from 1907, and maybe there was one in 1912 or, you know, of similar things. Anyway, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yes, Brent.
Luke, I have a question for you. Now, understand, I don't doubt you, but for my purposes, I need to know that you are legit. Do you have a couple patent numbers that you could share with us so that we can know that we can look them up and know that you are what you say you are?
Which particular kind of propulsion system are you having an interest in? Are you interested in the magnetohydrodynamic? Are you interested in the electrogravitic?
The magnetohydrodynamic and a plasma.
Magnetohydrodynamic and a plasma. All right, let's take a look here and see if we can find a nice one to pique your interest.
I'm going to hang up and listen online because I only got one hand and I can't write. So.
All right. Very well. Thank you for the call.
All right. Gentlemen, could feel free to take a look at the United States patent number 5334060.
Okay.
That would be for his magnetohydrodynamic request. And let's see, get the good old plasma propulsion out. Just so many choices. Okay, there it is.
And let me say to our caller on hold, just hang on, we'll get to you here in a second.
Let's go to this one. And for plasma propulsion, let's have him take a look at, I think he would probably be interested in, say, the electric generation propulsion system. This is a newer one, one that is currently 2006/0198485, plasma electric generation and propulsion system. I think that would probably sate his curiosity.
Outstanding. All right. Let's go back to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark.
Luke, I wondered if you had tried to build any of these craft yet.
I am in the process of trying to procure the funding to be able to do so. Just the same.
Great. Have you had any success yet, or is it in the planning stages?
Well, a paralegal's wages don't quite give me the leeway to spend the money that I would like to on it, but I have had some success with a power generation system, and I'll just sort of leave it at that. If you go to the UFOHowTo.com website, you'll see there's a link on any one of the pages called Sigma Squad, and that is the blog/newsletter that we'll be putting out and keeping people up to date on what the latest developments on my lab is.
Thanks, Luke. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Have a good one.
1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. That's the number to call. Toll free throughout North America. If you wish to talk with our guest, Luke Fortune, if you have a question or a comment about this UFO technology. Luke, did you have any idea when you put this online that it was going to create such ripples around the world?
I can honestly say that I did not. When I put it up, I thought there would be a good level of interest, but I expected a lot of resistance.
And what kind of resistance have you encountered?
There have been a few people who are very serious and ardent believers that UFOs are alien technology and alien technology only. And a lot of people have, some people have written in and indicated their displeasure that I would voice anything other than something supporting their belief that it's alien only. And it's really hard for them, and they want to get in my face and say, you haven't had a sighting, and you haven't seen, you don't know. And it's like, well, I have had a sighting, and that's how I got into, you know, this line.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I say again that I have absolutely no problem when people say that they have seen a UFO. I have no problem when they present various forms of evidence that some of the UFOs are extraterrestrial. Although, you know, I say I don't believe anything, nor do I disbelieve. You know, you just look at the data and it takes you where it takes you. But at the same time, I think we need to keep in mind that there's some pretty smart people on this planet. And I think we humans are capable of developing a lot of this technology ourselves, even if it's back-engineered. Still, you still got to do that. All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yes, Chris.
My question, well, first of all, good evening, Kevin and Luke. How are you doing?
Outstanding.
My question, Luke, is there any way that you can find out if somebody is actually currently working on this technology as a way to kind of prove its legitimacy, I guess? Is there anything that we know that's in the works right now by any kind of private companies or individuals that we could kind of check in on?
I'm afraid I'm not fully grasping your question. You're asking...
Do you know of offhand of any working systems that, you know, we could view or witness ourselves that put the principles of the patents into actual working technology?
Well, I think that most of the people that are doing the work on these kind of propulsion systems are in aerospace. And so with aerospace, there's the whole element of military involvement and classification and government security. So off the top of my head, I would say no. But off the top of my head, I would also say that as soon as the funding is procured, that is something you'll be able to see out of Team Fortune Laboratories.
That would be outstanding. Outstanding. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate all the information. Good show.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have just a little bit, a few minutes here before our next break, and we have a flash message from the fellow that got you and me together over in London, actually.
Definitely.
And he says, great show, Luke, great to hear you tonight. And then he's
got a
question. He says, where are you going with your research after the release of your books? Will you be attempting any building yourself? And what is the most important discovery that you've made?
Well, as stated earlier, it's just a matter of procuring the funding. As far as the most important discovery, I've committed them to paper. My initial plan was just to write a book that was 100 years of the UFO patents, but there's so much information that it had to be committed to a six-volume series. And I understand that for a lot of people, six volumes at 500 pages is a lot to digest. So maybe the primer would be the best place for them to start, UFO How-To, the basics. Like I said, they're one of each patent with explanations. That would probably be where I would point people to start to look for what the most important is, because that kind of falls in line with the question, what would you build had you the facilities right now? And I outline it in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written in layman's terms. So you do have some of the technical terminology in the patents, but you also have layman explanations to make it more digestible.
Okay, now, Luke, I got to ask you this. Let's say you get the funding. Let's say you get it built. Are you going to fly it?
Absolutely. Space tourism beckons. These books make the average Joe have a shot at being able to get a bite out of the apple of space tourism. I see in the very near future enterprising people that will be setting up space tours for like cruise ships, only instead of going out into the ocean, you'll be taking a tour around the outer giants.
Wow.
Wouldn't it be nice to be able to take your sweetheart on a honeymoon and see Ganymede in Europa, and to see Jupiter rise over the horizon of a moon? I see it as a very real probability, and in the very near future.
Would you have to have some sort of a spacesuit inside of this thing once you leave our atmosphere?
Well, more than likely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, safety would want to be the highest concern.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that's not going to be limited and controlled by mega corporations and by billionaires who have, you know, too much money and not enough time. I mean, this is something that will be, you know, through this knowledge, made available to just about every average person who wants a shot at the pie.
How difficult would one of these be to fly, to pilot?
Well, I don't think that it would be particularly difficult. Since the propulsion system basically works just by charging, you'd have your elements charged and set to, say, like the cardinal points, or set to like the points on a cube, and then you would just pick the direction and then set your vehicle into motion.
Mm-hmm. Would you, if you're inside the thing,
mm-hmm.
would you be weightless? Flying here on Earth, would you be weightless?
Good question. That I can't give you an answer to. I think you would be about as close to it as you could get. I would believe so.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely think so as you got further out and in the free void of space.
Yeah, but let's say, you know, I leave Phoenix and I just want to fly to Fort Worth. Would I be weightless in that flight?
I don't think you would have enough time to enjoy being weightless because of the incredible speeds that are generated. When people see these craft and they dart across the sky at many thousands of miles per hour, you know, if you're just traveling city to city, you're not going to be in the air long enough to be able to unbuckle your seatbelt and say, hey, look, I'm weightless, free fall.
Uh-huh. But what do you think, though? Do you think they would be weightless?
I imagine that there would probably be a small element counter to the direction of thrust,
uh-huh.
but a very small element. I think it would probably come close to weightlessness.
Hmm. So you really would have to be belted in. If you were, let's say you just decide, okay, we're going to circle the Earth here three times. We're not going into orbit, but we're just going to circle the Earth three times. Okay, you could do that in a matter of a few minutes. But you really would need to be belted in, so you wouldn't just kind of float up out of your seat.
Well, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a lot like the aircraft that give people the sensation of weightlessness by controlled descent.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I speak?
Yeah, the vomit comet. That's what they call it. They call it that. All the astronauts have to train in it. They call it the vomit comet. They take you way up high, and then dive towards the ground at a very rapid rate of descent. And people inside experience something akin to weightlessness.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're seconds, I say, from being in a break. When we come back from this break, we'll continue, ladies and gentlemen, with your telephone calls, 1-800-289-1092. And we're talking with Luke Fortune, the author of the material at the website called UFOHowTo.com. We shall return.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
And welcome back. We're talking this evening with Luke Fortune. He is the author of the material found at UFOHowTo.com. And basically, what you find there is 100 years of UFO technology as reflected primarily in the patent archives of the U.S. Patent Office. Luke, I got to ask you something now. It's not entirely patents, because you did mention Searle's.
I mentioned Searle in talking with you, but I don't actually include any of Searle's work in any of my books.
Okay.
He did not patent. A lot of people who have an interest in UFO technology seem to bring him up, so I got apprised of, you know, what he's doing and how it works.
I've seen some photographs, and you probably have too, that purport to be his craft in flight. Have you seen those?
I have seen a couple, yes.
Pretty interesting stuff. Now, do you know of, now this is very closely associated with a question that one of our audience has already asked, but I'm going to word it just a bit different. Do you know of anybody that has done a test flight in building their patents, either manned or unmanned? I know there are lots of stories and rumors, but do you know of anybody that actually did it?
There is one inventor that I have been having a correspondence with out of Canada, who I am presently attempting to negotiate the right to be able to write his book and his life story for him. He has a very interesting patent that is simultaneously power and propulsion for UFO-style craft. And I would like to be able to go further into detail about that, but like I said, we haven't fully negotiated the details out yet. But I'll keep you guys apprised as that comes up.
I think I know who you're talking about, and after the show, I'll give you a name and see if that's him. I know you've got to keep that under wraps while you're negotiating. But anyway, let's go to the telephone line. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, my goodness. I'm driving from Tacoma, and I cut this a little bit later. Are you broadcasting up in the Seattle-Tacoma area on the radio?
Seattle-Tacoma, no. I have a station in Kent.
Kent, well, that's it.
Mm-hmm. All right, you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I sure do. I cut this a little bit late, so you're saying there's all these volumes about UFOs, and the UFOs are really patented? And there's something about, you said something about a Sigma group or something. So I can learn more by getting into the Sigma group. I'm trying to get a picture of it.
Trying to catch up. Yeah, okay, here's the deal. The deal is, yes, there are many, many patents in the United States Patent Office that are what we would call UFO technology. It is technology that we generally think of when we think of UFOs. I forget what you call it, but that's the blog and newsletter on the website at UFOHowTo.com. What's it called, Luke? Sigma what?
Oh, we affectionately called it the Sigma Squad, but that's just going to be the name of the newsletter as it comes out.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You can see it at the website at the Sigma Squad link.
All right. Caller, do you have any further question or comment?
This is fascinating, though. I didn't realize any of this really was. It's all patented, huh? I mean, a lot of it's patented.
Yep.
That's just amazing. Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you for letting me express my opinion. And
certainly.
Right here.
Thank you for the call. 1-800-289-1092. And I would imagine, Luke, that that's a pretty common response. People are surprised that, hey, all of this stuff is in the patents.
Yeah, a lot of people, they are surprised that it's patented, and they just don't want to believe that the technology exists, that it is in our possession. And they say, oh, yeah, well, it must be a patent, but it's not what I saw. And I'm like, well, okay, let's take a description. You saw a glowing ball of light in the sky. Maybe a pilot saw the same. They tried to report it. Radar couldn't pick it up, and the thing darted off at thousands of miles per hour. Yes, that technology is patented. That technology is in the public domain now. It is no longer patent protected. It was designed, it was invented, it was built, it was protected for a period of 20 years. Now it's considered open technology, much like gas engines. Anybody could build a car or decide to build a new particular kind of engine. Well, you could decide to build this craft if you were aware that it existed.
When we look at the patents, we're not looking really at blueprints of how to build this, right?
Well, they're not exactly blueprints in that they don't tell you, you know, machine a piece of metal so that it's 9 inches by 3 inches by 2 inches. I mean, it's not that level of blueprints, but it is a description with many, many, many technical drawings showing what it is to be built and how to put it together.
Do all of them have the saucer shape?
The vast majority have the saucer shape. There are a few that have odd and unusual shapes. If you're familiar with the Adamski craft,
yeah,
the photos there, one of the very first magnetohydrodynamic patents does resemble the Adamski craft as it was photographed.
You mentioned earlier, and I'll have to apologize that I just can't remember what you said about it, but the reason why the saucer shape is so prevalent, was there a reason why?
For the airfoil craft, it's because of the aerodynamics. For the electrogravitic craft, it has to do with surface area to maximize the utilization of the electrogravitic effect.
All right, now the electrogravitics, if this stuff is in the public domain, does that mean then that other nations have this information?
Ironically, yes. The patents, the vast majority of the patents in the UFO How-To series come from the U.S. There are two patents that are, in fact, French patents that I have translated, because I do speak some French, and about four patents that come from Great Britain. But I have come to find that many of these patents are mirrored, say, in Japan, in Russia, in German, in China, in Korea, in Italy. I mean, many countries have this technology. It's as if this technology is choosing to be born, and it is erupting. And despite the fact that whatever interests are trying to keep it from being fully revealed, it is still coming forward. It's just a fact of physics. You can't conceal a natural effect. And when you charge something up with a whole lot of electricity and you pulse it, it wants to move in the direction of its north pole. You maximize that effect by using the right materials to pulse the electricity into. People are discovering this all over the world.
Okay, it wants to move in the direction of its north pole.
Correct.
But what if I want to go south?
Well, not in the direction of the north pole of the planet.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying I want to turn this craft, or we'll, just to simplify it, we'll say we are headed north, and I want to turn around and go south. How do you do that?
You would build the craft in such a way that, depending on the type of electrogravitic system you use, if you were to build, say, like a Bonson system, there you've got a craft that's more like the cigar shape. And what they do for directional control is they have a capacitance, they have an entirely separate capacitance that they keep charged near the back end of the ship, near the back end of the cigar. And by the movement of that capacitance in relationship to the rest of the craft, it causes a directional change, kind of like a rudder.
Hmm. What about on a saucer-shaped craft?
With a saucer-shaped craft, you would probably have the best result. You have the top surface, the top skin, which can be charged to create your vertical, you know, your rise and your descent. But then you would place at strategic points around, say like at the cardinal points and halfway between the cardinal points, these capacitor banks made up of the appropriate materials, the things with the odd nuclear spin value, and then you would charge them based on the direction, or you would fire off the electricity into them based on the direction that you'd want to move. This is one of the reasons why a lot of people describe when they see a UFO, they don't see a smooth transition or a rolling curve. They say, well, I saw it, and it darted forward, and it went, you know, however many miles, and it suddenly made a right-angle turn, and then it turned at like an 80-degree. And it's like, well, that would be the craft design with the capacitive devices placed at different points on the ship, and they're firing them in different sequences to create the different directional movement.
Would a great deal of thought and care have to go into the construction of these craft to make sure that they are as light in weight as possible, or is that even a factor?
Well, weight doesn't really seem to come into play with the electrogravitic force. You're talking about a propulsive force that is like 10 to the 40th power times stronger than gravity.
10 to the 40th power?
Yeah, that's a lot of zeros.
Yeah, it is. And it's that much stronger than gravity.
Right. Now, one of the things that Townsend Brown was working on that wasn't quite so highlighted was his work with various ceramics.
Let's hold that until we come back from this break. We're headed off into a break, and I don't want to interrupt that. I want to hear it all. All right,
folks. Wow, what can I say? Wow. We'll be back on the other side of this break. And the telephone lines will still be open at 1-800-289-1092. How about you? Are you going to try to build your own UFO?
Well, they happen every day. Good things, you know, they'll
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. My guest this evening is Luke Fortune, and we're talking about the very amazing work that he's done, research that he's done in primarily, in, well, I guess exclusively, in the U.S. Patent Office, and has put all of this together in a series of books, I guess you could say manuals as well, books about, you know, 100 years of UFO patents. It's an amazing thing. People are surprised, a lot of people, that UFO technology is patented and is in the public domain. But that's what this stuff is. All right, Luke, you were going to say something about Townsend Brown and ceramics.
Yes, Townsend Brown, famous for, you know, his work with the flying craft, did a lot of work with ceramics, and in particular with trying to charge ceramics. He would take the ceramic compounds and pulse them with electricity during their formative processes. Not all of that information is available at present. However, my own research and look and cross-correlating to other known facts, like, say, Searle, John Searle, we were talking about him. Searle's UFOs are made of concrete. He uses concrete forms. And a lot of people wonder, and they say, well, how is it possible that, you know, with a concrete form, it's something that would weigh so much? Well, concrete is a ceramic. And the one thing that these ceramics all have in common is that all ceramics, or that most of these ceramics, contain quartz. Quartz is a big player. Most people know that quartz is piezoelectric, but what they don't know is that quartz is pyroelectric, meaning that if it gets heated enough, it actually generates electricity. Now, just taking a step into the theoretical, it would be entirely possible that someone could have taken a ceramic and, say, put in shavings of materials that had odd nuclear spin values, like neodymium or manganese, magnesium, and in the formative process, pulsed them with electricity to the point that they were able to float or levitate. Something like this would explain the UFO sightings that people, military, have described at various bases, where they say, well, I opened the door and I looked in a hangar and here was this saucer-shaped craft and it was just floating. It was just floating. It had no landing gear. It was just floating. How is this possible? Here's one of the means and the ways that it could be possible.
All right. Now, that brings up a question. And, when, you know, we're in the last few minutes of the show, but I got to ask this now. I'm standing there looking at this thing floating in the hangar, and it's just floating. Obviously, there's a great deal of electricity happening. Do I feel any of that electricity?
Inside the vehicle?
No, outside, looking at it.
Outside the vehicle, more than likely. Most people that claim to have up-close encounters, they feel the static, mm-hmm. or they feel the radiation, or the area turns out to be radioactive afterwards. Like I said, many of the materials with odd nuclear spin values are radioactive. Metals like germanium, strontium, these are the ones that have the highest odd nuclear spin values and would give a great electrogravitic effect. It's very probable that the U.S. military, when experimenting, was using these materials, and that's why people who were witness, you know, back in the 60s, 70s, et cetera, even up to the present day, are irradiated, or an area is irradiated. It's entirely probable that's why.
But again, you're not discounting the idea that there can be some of these that are of extraterrestrial origin.
It's entirely probable. I look forward to the day when it'll happen, but so far no one has, you know, stepped up with their friend from another world and said, lo and behold, here is. I look forward to that day. I hope that day happens. But as for right now, the technology does exist, and it is possible for the average person to have the knowledge of that technology in their hands.
You know, it's entirely possible as well that now that you're putting this information out, and it, the information starts, it might just start, you know, growing and building into a great tsunami of action, and all of a sudden we've got a world full of UFOs flying around. Everybody's got their own parked outside. And now, you know, all the police are having to work UFO crashes and things like that. It's possible that at some point the President of the United States is going to call you in and say, as Lincoln did to Louisa May Alcott when he said to her, so this is the little lady that started this great war. And they call you in, and there you are, 90 years old, and he says, so you're the guy that did this.
The technology is erupting. You know, whether I talk about it or not, the fact is it exists in the patent office. The fact is that it exists in the patent offices of many countries all over the world. If we choose to allow people in positions of authority that we appoint or financial positions to suppress it, other nations are just going to go ahead. They're going to go ahead because they're not under that control. You know, do we want the craft in the sky, do you want them to be of U.S. origin, or do you want them to be from, you know, some other nation that's advancing technologically and leaving us in the dust?
So do you foresee a time in the near future when we'll start seeing UFOs that are no longer unidentified, but totally identified and ours, and we know it?
I think a lot of them are ours. I think a lot of them may not be ours. I think a lot of them may be of a Soviet or Israeli or Chinese. I mean, I'm telling you, this technology is cropping up everywhere. It's just a matter of time. I just happen to be the, you know, at the forefront of the wave as it's breaking. But the wave is going to break regardless of what I have to say.
How long? How long before it's out there and in the skies and everyone knows that that's ours?
Well, the stuff is out there and the stuff is in the skies. People are reporting it at record numbers from what I hear from, like, MUFON and UFORC.
Yeah, but how long until it's known that that's our stuff?
Well, we hope it's our stuff.
Okay.
That may not be our stuff.
How long?
Good question. I figure the sooner that we make people aware that they have this as an option, the sooner we will be able to say with certainty, yes, these are our craft and our skies. Yes, we're the ones in control.
If you were offered a flight aboard one tonight, would you take it?
Depends who is offering.
I'm referring to how confident are you that it's safe technology?
In that regards, yes. I thought you were talking about the regards of being, like, taken out over the sea and being shown the miracle of cement shoes.
No, just how safe?
I think that depending on the different kinds, like I said, I've identified probably five, six different main propulsion systems. I think that most of them are safe. I question some of the prototypes of the electrogravitics that have been either used for too long and the radioactivity has been induced in the metals, or else some genius decided to use genius in the sarcastic term, use radioactive material to maximize the electrogravitic effect. I would want a Geiger counter, to say the very least.
Fair enough. Luke, this has been fascinating. I appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us, and I hope you'll come back and talk with us some more in the future.
I thank you very much. It has been a joy and a pleasure to talk to you and to your fans, and I look forward to keeping you guys updated.
Outstanding. Now, if you will, just stay on the line with me as I close the show. I'd like to talk with you for just a second after the show. Wow, folks. UFO technology in the U.S. Patent Office. And apparently, if you've got the financial means, you can build one. Startling information, isn't it? All right, all week long, we've got guests lined up that are going to present us with information at that level. Different topics, but at that level. And you want to be sure that you don't miss a single show. If you miss a single second of any show, you're going to miss a universe of information, so you want to be sure that you catch every second of every show. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your family, tell your enemies to tune in to The Kevin Smith Show, all right?
My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow night, so long, everybody.